Hello. Welcome back to Creative Chit Chat. I'm Ryan McLeod, and I hope you're all well. This week, it's two for one. I've got two guests. It's Kat and Andy of No Comply, who have created this and designed this sort of process of taking old skateboards and creating a material from them and then using that to create brand new products, and then they've sort of developed a business around that, selling the products and working with other people creating products for them. And it's this amazing, like, sort of wonderfully visual process where they talk through the whole process in the episode, which is fascinating. And if you haven't seen it, I would encourage you to go onto their Instagram, nocomply.design, and see the process for yourself. There's just a lovely part of it where they take all the skateboards and compress them with glue. And you sort of see the side profile of all the boards and all the layers and all the colours. And it's almost like a layer cake from something like Bake Off, where the glue looks like icing dripping down the side of this multi-coloured layered cake. It's beautiful. Yeah, I would encourage you to go and see it. And then once you've created this sort of material, they chop it up and then make it into loads of different things, from like chopping boards, pizza cutters. I think they talk about how they started out with much smaller items, so things like earrings, and then they've sort of built it up and changed their product range over time. And they talk about how that the business is built as well. And there's one like lovely little soundbite where they like a lot of their market that they sell to aren't necessarily skaters, and there is this amazing sort of embedded history in all the boards that they use and repurpose that has obviously come from skating. And yeah, like people ask questions like how many kickflips has that chopping board done, and I think it's just a wonderfully sort of bizarre sentiment and statement in it. And I think that's the beauty of what they're doing, is they're taking something that's had this really rich history and it contains so many stories, and then they're repurposing it into a completely new life. And they talk about how difficult that process actually is, and it's really fascinating. And I think that's what's amazing about this episode. It's a real sort of deep dive into that process and how they work. So yeah, let's get into the episode. So this is Kat and Andy of No Comply.
It's kind of hard to know where to start, because we've in many ways our paths have been crossed for a very long time, haven't they? But creatively, that's only really happened with No Comply, and that's been in more recent years. So if we're going right back to the start. I was always really into sort of creative subjects at school, arty stuff. I had a next door neighbour when I was wee, and she was an artist, and I was absolutely obsessed with her. Her and her partner built a studio in the back garden, and half of it was for her artwork and half of it was for his music stuff. He was her sound engineer. And I would just go up there all the time and play around and draw and paint and all the rest of it. So I was always really into that. But I suppose wasn't ready to go off and study, or wasn't into that straight after school. I think we were together from high school. So
Bebo days.
That's our origin story. So the plan was always to do a bit of work and save up and go travelling. So did that for a year, came back, worked a bit more, went off and did a ski season together, and then came back and thought, right, what am I doing with life? And I think by that point I had decided that it was definitely something creative that I wanted to pursue. Art school had been a sort of idea that I toyed with. So I did a portfolio course at GSA, got a portfolio together, and wound up in Dundee at Duncan of Jordanston. So did the general foundation course to start off with, and absolutely loved it. I think a lot of people struggle that first year, because you're doing a bit of everything. You sort of spend half your time in design and then half your time kind of fine art and trying all the subjects out. I loved every single one of them. I couldn't decide whether I wanted to be upstairs in design or downstairs in fine art. And, tried a bit of jewellery, tried a bit of illustration, tried a bit of fine art. And everything ticked a box for me. You know, we were introduced to a new subject each week and I was like, yeah, that's the one. And story of my life, I was sort of paralyzed by indecision, but eventually chose illustration. But I kind of toyed with the idea of fine art throughout my 4 years, really, and sort of questioned a lot if I'd made the right decision sometimes. Even up until like my last year, I think I sort of had a crisis and was like, who am I? I don't know if I'm doing the right thing. Or, but actually the illustration course was really great for me. There was brilliant tutors that were really key to, I don't know, getting me through it really, as well as obviously classmates. I fell in love with printmaking. I sort of spent all my time in the French studio and did every process I possibly could and tried all that out. In my final year, took the Design Enterprise module as a kind of dissertation or equivalent of, and that sort of presented an opportunity to create a hypothetical business plan as your kind of written piece of the course. And it just so happened that around that time, Andy and I, completely unrelated to anything at art school and all of that kind of creative side of things, we had stumbled upon, in a way, broken skateboards. Yeah, and playing around with them. And that was kind of just starting around that time. So I decided to use the Design Enterprise module as a space to kind of build up a possible business model for that. And, it was all hypothetical. But through that, I guess we started to take it a little bit more seriously and started to get ourselves involved in a few markets. I don't know, we can discuss that together. But yeah, so that kind of started to evolve. I finished up art school and first job I applied for out of that was for graphic design position at a wee design studio in the city, and I somehow got the job not knowing a single thing about graphic design and having studied none of it at school. So I was kind of baffled myself as to why I might have got it, but I've kind of been there since. It's been 6 years now since uni, which is terrifying.
So maybe this is a good point to like jump back and then you can give us the equivalent of that timeline.
Yeah, cool. So my creative journey, I guess we kind of go back to kind of like standard grades of high school. I wasn't ever too academic, but the subjects that really did interest me were things like music, sound engineering, graph comms, so it's like graphic communication, other kind of technical drawing and stuff. And those are the subjects that really kind of caught my attention and really made me want to focus and explore that creative side, I guess. Especially with music, I kind of grew up from the start of high school drumming, a little bit of guitar. So, yeah, just with like music classes and listening to some of the older students, all the older pupils like playing instruments, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Maybe this is something like I can try out a bit more and learn. So I remember coming home from school after my first ever music lesson in first year, after watching one of the sixth year pupils play the drums. I was like, Mom, Dad, I need a drum kit. So yeah, I got a drum kit for my Christmas that year, and then that was like my start with kind of exploring that kind of side of things. And I started a band with two of my best pals called Kooji Wooji, which is this little kind of like pop punk kind of rock band, and it was the ultimate cheese fest. But really good fun. And I guess kind of leading after high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I kind of had full intentions of wanting to go down the architecture route, actually, originally, but I don't think my grades quite allowed that. So I was like, well, I wasn't quite ready to go straight to college or university. So I was like, I'll do a few gap years. So I went to Canada, did a bit of snowboarding for half a year, worked at Lake Louise. This was like a lifty and it was great fun. Came back from there. I was like, oh, I still don't really know what to do. But then Kat had finished high school at that point as well, because I was a year above her. And kind of jumping before that, we that's how we met, because we were both at the same high school together. And I flirted with her on Bebo. And I think I told her she was fit or something like that. And then we'd constantly ignore each other in the hallways
pass
for about a year.
Awkwardly, yeah.
True romance. And then... so going forward again, so when I came back from Canada, Kat had just finished high school, so we decided to go away in a couple gap years as well together. Go, like she already mentioned, went to Austria, worked there for the season, and then did a bit of traveling around Australia and New Zealand and stuff like that afterwards. And when we came back, I got into work, kind of doing just your classic kind of call center work, and I was just like, oh, this isn't really for me. It's not really kind of demonstrating my creative, I wouldn't say talent, I don't want to say that like that, but like my creative drive. So Kat actually said to me, she's like, there's an opening day at Elmwood College in Cooper to do to horticulture. And my first ever job kind of throughout high school was doing gardens at a hotel through in Creef. So I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe go and have a look at that and see what it's like. So I went and studied horticulture for a couple of years, and that was the best decision I ever made, because now my full-time job is I've got a garden landscaping business in Dundee, and that's such a fun and creative everyday job, because I get to go out and meet clients on a day-to-day basis and talk about designing a garden, you know, from start to finish, or then maintaining it, or just maintaining gardens. But it's a really fun and very rewarding job. So meanwhile doing that, I was also kind of dabbling when we first moved to Dundee, when Kat mm-hmm. started university here, we got our first flat together, and it was really exciting, and we're like, oh, we can try build our own furniture. So we did the whole classic thing, you know, going onto Pinterest and doing a little mood board, and like, oh, what can we do? And of course at that time you stumble across the recycling of the old pallets. We're like, oh, cool. Well, we can get some old pallets and we can, you know, put a few nails in them and totally wing it. And these things were awful. We made like a coffee table for our first flat.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? Looking back at it, I think we should be really proud of it. I mean, it is haggard. And I'm going to say it's got character. That's probably the politest way of putting it. It's haggard, but kind of nice. And like, we've got no background skills of like DIY or woodworking whatsoever. We're just kind of fake it to make it kind of thing, and wing this pallet kind of upcycling. So we went to where my dad stays, and it's where my grandparents lived when I was younger. It's an old barn through in Perthshire, and we found an old jigsaw, like a jigsaw cutter, and Kat had a Dremel drill. So we're just kind of like cutting up some old bits of pallets, kind of making the table, and we made some, like, remember the lollies?
The lollies were cool.
Yeah, like wall arts. We made, like, you know, fabs and the wee rocket lollies. We were like cutting those out and then putting them on the wall, and our family, like, oh, these are so cool. Like, people will love these. Like, they really wouldn't love them. Like, looking back at it now, they were pretty bad. So that was kind of kick-started the whole the creative spell of woodworking in both of us. I think, right, this is fun, this is really rewarding, especially when you like oil the grains and that, you're like, oh, that really comes to life and it's beautiful and it's different, it's unique, and I think, you know, we could do more kind of woodworking. So we did that, and I guess where we kind of got to where we are, well, to start with No Comply, is like, I grew up skateboarding from a really young age, probably from the start of high school, maybe prior to that. Actually, it was prior to that. It was about primary six. I remember there was a day where you could bring in, it's like a show and tell kind of thing, and I brought my skateboard, and I just learned how to ollie, and I lined up my whole class to watch me ollie over like a bit of rope, and it was like the most amazing thing I'd ever done in my life. It was like an inch tall. I was like, yes, the crowd goes wild. They probably didn't at all, but in my head, I remember it being massive, like a big deal. And Yeah, so I grew up skateboarding and I had loads of old boards lying around. And we, again, while we're kind of doing our palette stuff, I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe we can explore with some other kind of things. And I had a broken board, which kind of revealed some of the colored ply that makes up a skateboard. And we just made a few bits of jewelry that were for just as gifts for like family for like a Christmas one year. And we started off making just like, I don't know, brooches and earrings. And
yeah, it was definitely the little bits that we started off with first.
And again, that was just using a jigsaw cutter and a Dremel. So they were rough around the edges, we should say.
Character.
And the feedback we got from our family at that point was, oh, these are really nice and thank you so much. Whether it just being too nice, who knows, at the time. But I guess that kind of kick-started our love for recycling skateboards. I guess that's where we got to.
And so, like, you talked there about the breakdown, the makeup of the board, and sort of exposing that for the first time. But that's pretty, for me anyway, it seems like that's pretty central to the whole identity of the company, of who you are and what you do, and what's recognisable about it. So, could you explain a little bit for someone who's never seen the inside of a skateboard, like what are those things that make up a board?
Yeah, so a skateboard is made up of seven layers of Canadian maple, and they're like a millimeter thin veneer, and it's a stubborn piece of wood because it has to be super strong, obviously, withstand a skateboarder kind of thrashing it around and stuff. So it tends to have five layers of long grain, so the grain kind of going from the nose to the tail of the skateboard. And then two cross grain sections as well, kind of sandwiched in between it. That just kind of gives it overall strength. And these layers, a lot of companies, not every company, but a lot of companies dye the veneer. So they've got like a colored veneer. And that can be ranged between one and all seven veneers being like a different color. And I think it's just an aesthetic thing that why they do it. It's just like a nice little kind of colored detail.
And so is it like a unique identifier for each company?
There are some companies that have kind of unique patterns almost to their colorways. So like Polar skateboards have, like we can tell when it's have Polar skateboard, you can tell by the graphic, but like you can tell by the plies because they have a kind of same color on the exterior than black ply. And then
three plain
in the middle. So, and then Enjoy boards, they're always really colorful. Same with Creature. So yeah, there's some you get a kind of sense sometimes, and others are just random, aren't they?
Some brands we get so excited about receiving them and getting them donated. So like they're just full of color, and we're like, oh, these are like the magic boards. You're like, we can't just use these for any old project. We'll save them for like a special one, because again, like we were kind of saying, like not every board does have a color in it, and sometimes they just have one or two. So when you get one which has got like, you know, four or five, you're like, okay, these are like, that's the good shit.
Yeah. The colourful boards are obviously, you know, what we look for, because it's what everyone's attracted to, is the colours, it's the interest and things. So we get deliveries of boards sometimes, and I work from home, so I tend to pick up the deliveries, but I'll wait till Andy's home before we go through the board, go through the box, and
it's like Christmas morning. Isn't it?
And so, like, so where do they come from? Where do you get your boards?
Most of our boards just now come from various different skate shops across the UK. We've kind of reached out to a number of shops, and quite often, if someone buys a new deck, they'll change over their hardware in store, and they'll just leave their old deck. And there's been some initiatives as well to kind of like put call outs for old boards as well. So people drop them in at the shops, and then we reach out and go, hello, have you got any nice boards for us? And they'll send them in the post. And then there's folk locally as well. You know, we get support from some folk locally, and it's really good, like at skate jams and things, they'll do call outs and people leave decks, and
because they're also like, they're really sentimental things, like skateboards, you know, they can be a memory of a certain skate holiday or just or a gift from somebody at Christmas or whatever, or they learned like a particular trick on that board. So they can be quite hard things to give up, especially to a company that they don't know that well. So kind of like what Kat was saying, we do try and give incentives as much as we can. You know, we'll be like, you know, if you can donate us some of your old boards, we'll make you something in return as a massive thank you, because we can't do what we do without the kind donations from, you know, the skaters and skate shops. Yeah, I mean,
we literally rely on the boards and the sort of generosity of parting with them.
Yeah. And like the way we always try and give back to the skateboard community as a whole is we'll always be open to like skateboard competition trophies. And we've had so many, you know, cities and towns reach out to us over the last few years, been like, you guys make us a trophy for the skate comp this year, or can you donate some prizes just to, you know, to hand out? Like, absolutely, because this is like the one thing that we love to see, is like how hyped people get. And like some of these trophies that we've made, like you watch some of these people like skate so hard and like they deserve to win, like a cool thing to have on the mantelpiece for a year. And it's really cool to know like a lot of these trophies, they get handed over to like the next year's winner, so they get to keep it for a year and then it goes on. So it's like a bit of skate history as well. And it's cool that trophy has also been previously skated by so many other skaters. So for example, like the one we made for Perth, I think that was the first trophy we ever made.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
A big wheel, really cool. But that was boards purely being used by the Perth skaters. So it's going back to where it originally started and where the boards originally skated, which is a nice little touch.
Yeah, it's a lovely like circularity to that.
Yeah, sort totally.
Of,
yeah.
It's getting feeding into the community and stuff. Because I suppose like that sustainability is at the heart of that, like sort of the whole concept, the whole idea of what you're creating and what you're building. But I suppose you said that it's like Canadian maple. So where does that grow? Like the actual. Does that grow in the UK or does it only?
No. So the only thing, so we've also kind of dabbled a little bit with like skateboard manufacturing recently as well, so making our own boards.
Mm.
But there's nowhere in the UK that supplies UK grown veneers that we know of anyway.
No.
So we have to get ours shipped over from somewhere in Europe, and that originally gets shipped over from somewhere in America. So it's a bit of a long haul. So I can only guess, in all honesty, is that like it would come from Canada or the States. I'm not sure if there is anything else kind of locally, not locally as such, but you know, anywhere in the UK base even that makes these veneers.
They're producing the veneers, yeah.
Gap in the market, maybe. I don't know. Maybe we can speak to some forestry folk.
There is a Dundee guy, I can't remember his name now.
Bonnie Skateboard?
Yeah,
Malcolm.
Yeah. Is he... So he gets his own stuff, or is he bringing that?
So he gets it from the same supplier that we do as well. Oh man, Malcolm's stuff is so nice, it's so cool. And he incorporates like the cork aspect.
The cork,
into
yeah,
it as well.
It's such beautiful work.
Unique skateboard, that isn't it? Stunning. Mm. We've actually got one in our pile to be recycled. That got donated from a Dundee skater in the last few months. We're like, oh, this will be quite cool. Can I put a Dundee made board into a Dundee project? I quite like that. Pretty cool.
So once you get like a pile of boards in the post and you get all excited about them, like what do you do? What's the process of going from old board to beautiful object?
It's a lengthy one.
It's a sort of question or choice of material sometimes, just based on the fact that it takes so long sometimes before you've got like a workable piece of wood, really. Yeah.
So it's not like with most kind of like woodworkers, you can walk into like a wood store or a lumberyard or whatever and purchase a piece of wood that's ready to be made into a piece of furniture or whatever your project's going to be. But with skateboards, you can't do that. There's this whole kind of thing to produce a piece of workable wood before you can work on that piece of wood.
So the arguably the worst part is the first part. So all skateboards have grip tape on them, and that needs to come off, which is something.
As do your fingertips and your.
which is something, I mean, this probably says a lot about where we started. When we first started off, we weren't even taking the grip tape off. We were just running it through the saw, which was obviously blunting the blades almost immediately, and it's not the way to do things. So we learned the hard way on a lot of what we've done. But yeah, grip tape's got to come off. So quite often that's just with a heat gun. And
or occasionally the Scottish sunshine.
Yeah, so yeah.
Those 2 days of the year when we can put our skateboards out in the garden and let like the sun radiate the boards and
it's amazing because it just loosens up the glue, yeah. To a point where you can, generally speaking, you can just use a Stanley knife and a bit of brute force, and you get some that come off in a clean one, or and others that you're sort of picking away for. But yeah, so you de-grip them, and then we cut the noses and tails off of the boards. We use different parts of the boards for different projects, the different sections. So because you've got the kind of the concave in the board,
which can be super difficult to work with because a lot of skateboards have got different concaves. So trying to get like boards to match up to each other can be quite hard, so there's no gaps or kind of things like that.
Yeah, so yeah, we cut noses and tails off, they go off to one side, and then we tend to cut the board straight through the middle, and you get two long strips along the wheelbase of each board, and we use those for handles. So we do a lot of sort of bottle openers, pizza cutters and things like that, so they eventually go towards that. So you sort of slice the board off into all its different bits, and then you've got to sand the lacquer off to kind of make the wood porous again, I guess, so that you can glue it up, the glue sits in. And then, so yeah, sand the lacquer off, and then we glue the bits of the board up for whatever project that we're doing. And that involves a lot of glue, a lot of clamps, and the money shot you see of the glue sort of squeezing and oozing out, and the kind of colours of the dye and the ply kind of tend to seep into the glue. And
the real money shot.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's so good.
But that's why, I mean, it's great. Like, yeah, I think folk like to see process videos of our stuff because it's quite an interesting process before you've got something to work with. I think it also sort of shows how many stages there are before we can even put something on a lathe or shape it up to be whatever it's going to be, jewellery wise or chopping boards or bigger projects.
Yeah, for sure. And I think a lot of people like seeing the process stuff as well, because the amount of times we get asked, you know, if we hand paint all the stripes and the colours onto the wood, we're like, no, like that's there already. That's like why we do it. Otherwise it wouldn't be quite as interesting for us to kind of recycle something and then have to like single-handedly paint each stripe. Oh my gosh, that'd be so difficult. But very labor intensive.
Yeah, it is. And even, you know, beyond that, when you take a piece to the lathe, for example, and the contrast between putting the chisels into a skateboard where you've got the cross grains and the plies going in different directions, as opposed to like just a piece of wood.
Also because it's laminated as well, which adds like such a more challenging factor.
Yeah, I mean, things can delam in the worst case scenario.
Oh, yeah, we've had a few scares, not going to lie. There's been some times, like, because it's laminated and it's not like a solid piece of wood, like, if you go a bit too aggressive with your chisel sometimes, you need to take your time with it. But if you go a bit too aggressive, it might just snag one tiny bit of like your glue up, and that can then cause it to kind of explode in the lathe. And then we've had times where, like, we've done a bowl, for example, and you've got like the last stage and you've already spent, you know, an hour or whatever, you know, carving this beautiful bit of wood out into a bowl, and then that one little kind of catch just like separates it into like two or three pieces and goes flying past your hand. You're like, oh god, like, I need to change my pants. But that can be really frustrating because like you put so much work into these things, and then when stuff doesn't go as smooth as you want it to, you're like, oh god, perhaps to start again.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing with recycling materials. It's never going to be a straightforward process. It's always going to have, you know, its flaws and its challenges to kind of overcome.
But I suppose it's like Like even your process is really aesthetically pleasing because you've got all these layers. It's always unique.
Yeah.
Mm. You've also got all the board graphics, the colors, the, all the different bits that are involved in that that are sort of then being blended into these new things.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's sort of like celebrating that.
100%. Yeah, yeah. Like I always say to some people, well, so we both say to people at markets sometimes, like when you're kind of telling the background story of like what this product's made from. As soon as you say it's made from skateboards, they're like, no way, oh, that's so cool. And then you look a little bit deeper into it, like, oh yeah, well, how many kickflips has this chopping board done? Or has this chopping board caused someone to go to the hospital already? And you're like, oh, I hope not. Like, yeah, we too, but probably not.
But I think that's part of the appeal as well. It's like taking something that's had a life already, you know, and it's existed in one form, and you've put it into a completely new form. And yeah, some people get it straight away and others really struggle to process, like, how has this possibly been a skateboard? Yeah. Like, what do you mean?
But then I also think when you were talking about how you divide that up, you're almost like being like a butcher.
Yeah.
This is the prime bit of wood within the board.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff,
that flat wheelbase.
The prime cut. That I never thought of it like that.
Definitely.
We're gonna use that in our market. Yeah,
you can have that one for free.
No, you're absolutely right, though. Yeah, they're just such amazing, amazing pieces to work with. Really, really cool.
And again, we've learned the hard way because we just kind of feel our way. We've been feeling our way through all of this.
Yeah,
we've
completely
learned the hard way in terms of like, working out the most effective way to cut up a board, and what things can be used for, where and stuff. So that's become more considered over time, hasn't it? We've sort of think, okay, let's use all of this and how can we best do that? So
especially because skateboards can be quite hard to come by, whereas if we were based in like California, for example, you know, skateboards are just coming through the door constantly. So yeah, like you said, you know, we're definitely trying to utilize as much of the board as we can into all the projects. So even those tiny little offcuts we'll now use on jewelry pieces, or like the shavings from the lathe we'll try and put in little baubles to sell at Christmas and things like that. So it's just, again, trying to reduce waste as much as we can. And also, they're too nice to throw away. Like, even though these big offcuts are like, damn, that could be something. So our workshop has got so many boxes of useful material, which we're just hoarders, basically. We'll use them.
I
one
get
day
told off. I get sort of them like inches away from the bandsaw cutting something off, and he's like, "No, that's for this project." I'm like, "Sorry."
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you talk about this like on your journey as like a passion that it just sort of turned into something. But I suppose what we've not really talked about is like, well, how does that go from that to a business? How do you then make that decision or start to do those things? I know you said you talked about sort of doing presents and then sort of maybe moving into markets, but then how do you, like, what point did it then become serious and you're thinking, well, actually, this is now a proper thing?
I think when we first started doing like the small pieces, like just from that one skateboard I had, you know, just doing the little brooches and the earrings and stuff, I think it was the feedback we were getting. People were like, oh, you know, like, this is pretty cool. Like, I think you've got something quite, you know, unique here. You know, could you potentially try to make this, for example? And like, people come to us with ideas. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. Like, I never thought of that. So I can't remember what we went on to after that. It was maybe making like a few, actually, we made some display boards for a market. And people were like, yeah, the jewelry is nice, but is that display board for sale? And we're like,
that's right, yeah. And that's when we were starting to incorporate like hardwood and gluing up with the skateboards. But yeah, I find it really hard to pinpoint when, if at any point we decided to take ourselves a bit more seriously. You know, we get asked about our origin story all the time and, you know, how we came up with the idea, and there wasn't any kind of like one defining moment, really, was there? And I guess, I don't know, I maybe feel like, I guess we've started to take ourselves a little bit more seriously when other people start to take you seriously, and you get approached about sort of opportunities or things to be involved in, you go, are really us.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you start like, oh gosh, shit, we've got something here. And yeah, but the markets have been really important.
Mm-hmm.
They've been a brilliant way to put it out to new people, to meet other makers as well and see what other folk are doing. And yeah, I would say they've been really important in terms of transforming what we do into, like, from just like a bit of hobby to we can make a bit of money from this and grow something that's beyond the money as well. It's sort of
passion.
And just like, all the ideas that kind of play into sort of storytelling or like something that's had a life before it, and getting people to realize you can give life to something that might go in the bin otherwise, or all of that. Yeah.
And we really, like, with the name No Comply, I remember we sat outside our first flat. This is probably the days, you know, just post making like our first few pieces, and we're like, okay, so if we are gonna, you know, maybe do this, like, we need to come up with a name, because we can't just be called like Kit and Andy. That makes weird.
Well, I remember when we first started Classic Art School, I had a wee typewriter and I was getting, remember the little brown tags?
That's right.
And I was typing out handmade from old skateboards. And that's what we used to have on the tags. You know, there was no name or anything. It was just totally, yeah.
But even to this day, the tags have barely changed. We still kind of have that, just have like No Comply above it. So it's quite cool. Mm. That initial idea, it's not a typewriter anymore.
Yeah, but we don't I'm bashing them out.
But yeah, so we're sat outside our first flat and we're kind of like brainstorming like what's, you know, what could potentially make a play on words, or we don't want it to be too cheesy. And it took us weeks and weeks and weeks to kind of come up with it. And I think we had that penny drop moment with it. No Comply. Hold on, hear me out here. And we're like, No Comply. Like, it's a skateboard trick for one. And it's a really quirky skateboard trick. And we're like, oh, well, you know, the woodworking that we're doing is quite a quirky take on woodworking. So that kind of works in each other. And it's also got the word ply in it. And that's obviously our main focus with what we're doing is based on plywood. So it kind of works kind of in both ways. And we're like, oh, that's...
And just that whole concept, No Comply, like doing things differently or taking a different approach. And
sold.
We're amazing.
So yeah, I think again, like a lot of people ask us, like, what's with the name? And you explain it and they go, oh, that's cool. And then some people come up to us and be like, I get it, No Comply, that's the skate trick, right? And they're like, yes, oh yeah, I played Tony Hawk's when I was a kid. And you're like, nice,
because so cool. I mean, that, I suppose that's an interesting thing, is that I imagine that a lot of the audience that you sell to aren't skaters.
Correct. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, it's amazing the difference. And also the difference maybe in our like online audience and then our in-person audience as well. Like, it's wild. And I think we're always blown away as well by the like how wide an appeal it has. It's really interesting.
Like you said, like, I think a lot of our online following, there's a huge percentage are skaters, because it's a very relatable thing to them, and they're like kind of seeing where skateboards end up and like what's the potential with them and things like that. But when we do markets or our website, for example, when you see what sales come through, 95% of the time whoever's purchased something they're not skaters or necessarily, they're like, they might have a relation to it. They might be like, oh, my partner skated, or I used to skate when I was younger, or I just like the product for what it is. Like, I like the story, I like you guys, and there's always a cool kind of relation, but it's never actually a skater most of the time, is it?
Rarely, yeah.
So I suppose, like, so how have you seen the sort of the business grow, or like No Comply as a brand grow over, like, I mean, it's only a few years really that it's been going. And so, yeah, how have you seen it develop or change or evolve? Obviously, talk about the sort of quality element of that.
Yeah.
But what else has changed over time?
I think our ideas and maybe the product range, because like we're we're constantly, because we're self-taught with WeWork and we're still learning every day. You know, we have an idea or someone comes up with an idea and we're like, oh, we think we could maybe do it. Let's give it a shot. Mm. And you know, you make a lot of mistakes along the way, but eventually, you know, you'll crack it and it'll turn out quite cool. So I think maybe just our product range is probably a big one, and we're constantly trying to take on or learn new ideas and new techniques of woodworking and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you think back to the start and it was like our name, you know, when we started up with like a domain name and stuff at the website, it was No Complied Jewellery. That's what people knew us as.
Yeah, that's
No
right.
Complied Jewellery. And it was only that the jewellery was what we did for a while. And yeah.
And it kind of became No Complied Jewellery that also make homeware.
And then but it was only probably in the last couple of years we sort of got rid of that. You sort of stuff think, well, that's not appropriate anymore at all. So that's definitely been a big change, and that's happened because I suppose any kind of income that's come from No Comply, we've just reinvested back in tools. So we've kind of grown our tools over the years, and that's really facilitated what we could do.
Like for example, like we used to make our handles just by hand sanding them with like a belt sander, and then one of our old high school teachers reached out to us and was like, do you guys want a lathe that might help you?
I think we were sort of scoping out, you know, a lathe, and and this was probably before we were taking things seriously, so to speak, because they were a bit reluctant to spend hundreds of pounds on something, you know, any tool that we don't know how to use.
Well,
so I think we'd put a call out or said something about a lathe, so he was messaging,
and that was a game changer, because like many of our products are turned in a lathe, they're like in a hand turned, and so if we didn't have that, it would wipe out a massive amount of stuff that we're currently doing. And that's been such a pleasure to learn, like on both of us, isn't it? Like, it's a very therapeutic tool to work with as well, because you're literally watching something like a haggard, gnarly piece of glued up skateboard block slowly get, you know, shaped and formed into something pretty and nice. And
you
never really plan what the piece was going to look like either, can you? Because like,
yeah, I was going to say, like, we still don't really know. You know, we do the glue ups of the handles, for example, the handles especially, isn't it? And we sort of pick the colorways and what's going to work and stuff and glue them up. But you don't really know how the colors are going to kind of, or how it's all going to reveal itself in the turning, because it depends on the design. And
And you hit the off switch and go, damn, that's nice. Or sometimes you go, oh, that's not exactly how I had it in my mind. But it's still cool nonetheless, because I like the idea that you can't really plan it, and you don't really know exactly how it's going to look like, because the more you carve, the more you sand, the more colours it will reveal on like the outer side of the handles or whatever it is you're making. So you don't really have a solid clue of the colour aspect. You might have a good idea what the shape's going to look like, but you don't really know what the design of, you know, aesthetically what's going to look like until it's done. You go, that's cool, I like that, or I love that. So that's quite cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess it's grown as well, business wise, or changed. Again, with maybe people coming to us with different opportunities or chances to collaborate, and yeah, that sparks a new idea, and you go off on a different route. And so we worked with another company in Glasgow a few years ago now.
Yeah.
Reply Skateboards, and they take old boards as well that are broken but still skateable, so like they sort of reshape them basically, you know, so as long as they're not completely snapped, they can reshape them and put new graphic on and all the rest of it. So we did a collaboration with Danny where we released a number of boards where he reshaped them, and we did like an inlay of press skateboards on a board, as a kind of run of, I suppose, art pieces as opposed to...
They were probably skateable, but too nice to skate.
Yeah.
I think they were probably made as, like, you know, wall art pieces.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's been nice to do things like that over time as well. Yeah, people come to us with ideas for commissions or whatever and takes off and,
yeah,
you know, or yeah, sparks an idea for a new product and in general. And all of a sudden, I mean, I sort of lose track of the different things that we make now. And
I think more recently as well, like one of the things was one of my biggest dreams as a kid was to, like, one day, like, I'd love to, like, make my own skateboard. And I think once the kind of No Comply kind of established itself a wee bit and we got really comfortable using our tools and recycling skateboards, like, okay, well, I'm gonna finally invest in a skateboard press. So I got a friend over in Fife to make a steel frame that can withstand a bunch of pressure to kind of press our own skateboards. And we got Roots Furniture to CNC a skateboard mold for us. I kind of bought, like, a file on Etsy, and I had like the classic street skateboard concaves and stuff. So Roots CNC did the mold for us, and we finally could make our own skateboards, like, from scratch. And I was like, that is the coolest thing ever. And I was like, well, if we're gonna make our own skateboards, how about we kind of mix the whole No Comply aspect of recycled skateboards in with brand new skateboards? So now we've done a range of boards which the face veneer, so then, like, the graphic kind of side, is fully recycled skateboards. It's like a skateboard made from recycled skateboards, which is really cool. So that's been, like, a big dream of mine, especially to kind of dabble in that kind of manufacturing aspect. So yeah, so stoked to kind of do that. So that was, like, a really exciting point of, like, the business, I think, is to kind of do that. And also just see the reaction from people when, like, they see that and they're like, oh, that's so cool. Like, a skateboard that's been skated, that can now be skated again. So when that skateboard's break, can you make another skateboard? I'm like, man, that's a bit mental. That's full circle. And again. But yeah, like, there's been so many fun avenues we've gone down with this business over the years. And yeah, it's been an absolute joy to explore it.
And, like, you make it sound easy and sort of just fluid and wonderful, but, like, how does the dynamic work between the two of you, right? How, like, because you talk about it, like, you're both doing the same processes, like, you're working, like, how do you divide up the workload? How do you actually work in the workshop or, like, running the business? How does that?
Oh yeah, it's definitely not as
not
pleasant
always,
as it seems on the front.
Rainbows and butterflies and all the rest of it, I think.
We have our moments.
Yeah, we definitely have our moments. We absolutely have our moments, especially when there is frost on the ceiling and I can't feel my feet and it's time to go home and you get grumpy and
We take it out on each
angry
other sometimes.
Yeah, there are benefits and disadvantages of working with a partner and such close proximity and strength. No, and I mean,
harsh but fair.
No, I mean, generally speaking, I would say when we've got lots to do, we play to our strengths, and we know, you know, what to do to just get on. So Andy is the absolute lace master and he's a wizard at handles and bowls and everything. So he's really good at kind of cracking on with that. And I do a lot of the sort of chopping boards and jewellery stuff. And we kind of know, yeah, when it's time to get head down, we kind of stick to what we know, don't we? And and just get on.
The AirPods go in and the podcasts come on, we don't talk.
Yeah, and it's one of those things as well, I think, when you're in the workshop and you have nights where things go wrong, don't you? And I think when you get 3 mistakes in a row, I'm sort of like, down tools, let's go.
Yeah.
And because, you know, I think if one of us falls in, you know, into a bit of a bad mood, which can happen, then we just bounce off each other and the other one can just as quickly sort of fall into that as well. So yeah, there's perks. But you know, on the other side of that is there's a lot that can be said without speaking sometimes. Do you know what I mean? We kind of know each other pretty well by now.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I think that really helps as well. But yeah, I love that there's two of us and we can bounce ideas off of each other. I'm always just amazed by other people's brains because, you know, you come up with things that I would never think of and vice versa, I'm sure. Yeah. And then sometimes we finish each other's sentences.
So cute.
So, yeah. Yeah, there's good and bad, but I think it works.
So, like, where do you want it to go from here? What's the next step? What's the bigger picture? Where do you want Noncomply to go?
Good question.
I don't know. Like, I think we're both having so much fun exploring the possibilities with this business. And I think the whole thing where we've got to now has just been taking it as it comes, really. I don't think any of us have got, you know, plans to take it full time. Not because we don't have, you know, belief in it whatsoever. It's not that. Like, because I absolutely we both love our day jobs. Well, to an extent. Both love what we're doing, you know, creatively outside of Noncomply. And I don't think we'd really want to give that up. But I think we'd both like to put a bit more time into Noncomply and branch out, maybe go to more stockists and maybe go to markets that are outside of Scotland, you know, reach all these new places and take on bigger commissions and, you know, just really kind of spread the word of Noncomply, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of our biggest kind of difficulties over the years, if anything, has been time. Like, always is time. You know, as Andy said, we've both got our day jobs, you know, one of which, you know, Andy runs a whole other business by himself, you know, and is super busy with that a lot. And so Noncomply, we've always kind of made it work around the rest of our lives. You know, we selfishly want to kind of have a social life or time to ourselves as well, do our own things, do our day job. So it does always feel like, you know, you're juggling a million balls sometimes. And I think we both would like to give more time to it. And I think we both feel like we'd really push it to another level if we
gave it the time.
Yeah, if we afforded it the time.
Because right now, you know, we are doing, you know, your classic 9 to 5, and then you finish the day job, and then we have to commute to the workshop, which is
another
not ideal, because it's an hour and a half round trip. It's 45 minutes there, 45 minutes back currently. So then you're there for the whole evening, you get home late, up the next day straight into your day job, and then you can repeat that. And certain times of the year, like leading up to Christmas, you're at the workshop sometimes 4-5 nights a week.
Yeah.
And it's physically and mentally draining.
Yeah, it's intense.
But if we had maybe, you know, a day, maybe 2 days where we can fully dedicate those times and those days to Noncomply, I think it would take the pressure off and also make us enjoy it in those busy times much, much more.
Yeah, I think I probably feel more excited than ever just now about where it's going or where it could go. I've just gone down to part-time with my day job, so I have just been sort of afforded a couple more days to play with. And, you know, I'm kind of trying to think of the bigger picture and what else is going to go on in life. But, like, to have an extra day or two to put towards Noncomply could transform where we can take it. And also, I guess we've been having quite a few discussions recently about, like, what is Noncomply beyond just woodworking, or what could it be? You know, we've got that connection to skateboarding, and I think we would like to explore that more, because it's so important, it's so intrinsic to what we do. And yeah, and also I think, for me personally, I feel like I've got a lot of other creative outlets that I would like to work into, you know, and as I said, I've got the sort of illustration / graphic design kind of aspect of what I do, apparently. And, you know, quite into photography, and I've enjoyed a bit of video editing in the past as well. And it's like, well, can we work all of that into to No Comply and really expand on
what it is we do?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So I'm excited. And the fact that we're looking at changing where our workshop is as well. I think that will be...
This is exciting. Yeah. Like, we ideally, we'd love to, you know, have a space in Dundee that we can work from. Because it's not a full-time gig for us, we can't afford or really justify having a, you know, paying rent for these big, you know, industrial spaces. Not even industrial, just spaces that allow...
a space as well that allows...
tools and noise and
mess. We are noisy, we are messy.
Yeah, 100%. So we can't really justify that, which is why we are where we are with our current workshop. But we bought our first house last year, and we have a really nice garden space. We're kind of thinking to take up a small area in the back garden and make our own workshop there, so we can work from home, which will, oh my god, it'll make it so much better. Just because we can, you know, do a bit of work, go for a cup of tea, go back out, you know, do a wee bit of work again, and then, you know, call it a day. You don't have to worry about that 45-minute bloody drive.
Yeah.
There and back. So.
With any luck, you won't be able to see your own breath either, or see frost on the ceiling, or not be able to feel your toes. That would
So that'd be a game changer. And I think that would just, you know, give us a bigger drive as well to, you know, produce more things and experiment more. And again, going back to time, it will give us more time to have some fun with it.
So, yeah, just before we like finish up, I asked you to bring along some recommendations of things that you've been listening, watching, reading, or playing recently.
Well, we love binging like really shitty TV, but the thing we've gotten back onto recently is
Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, we tried watching this years and years ago, but we made that mistake of watching it late at night in bed on our laptop, and there was deep sexy voices always like put us to sleep. So now we're actually watching it, you know, in the comfort of our living room and actually take it all in. So that's been so good. We've like binged the whole thing in like, I don't know, a month and a half or something. So that's been great.
Yeah, that's been the main thing on the telly, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of listening, there's a great podcast, Drums by Darren. He's a Scottish maker that takes old drums and creates some like beautiful pieces of furniture, like homeware furniture from them. And he does like nice little kind of conversations with other kind of Scottish based artists, and they're very interesting, very similar to this. It's nice to kind of hear other stories of other, you know, makers all around Scotland. So he's been really interesting.
Mm. I've been listening to a lot of the Blind Boy podcast recently. Sort of long, meandering kind of rambles about a whole load of things, a lot of sort of mythology and, just a whole load of stuff. So, yeah, no, that's been, I listen to a lot of podcasts at work. And we both, quite oddly enough, I suppose, we don't have kids, but we've both been listening to a lot of Parenting Hell podcast.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Somebody does
funny
a good,
guys.
It's great. Been listening to that regularly for a while.
Yeah, it's an excellent listen no matter what.
It's great, yeah. Just a bit of light relief and
So I should have said before, the Drums by Darren podcast is called None of Your Business. It's not called Drums by Darren. That's just his Instagram handle.
Cool. If anyone does want to find you guys, where do they do that?
We're on all the, you know, the classic social media platforms. Are on nocomply.design. We've also got our website, nocomplydesign.com, and you can get all our kind of contact information there, or see what we're up to and give us a wee follow, and you can kind of follow along all our process and what we're up to over the next wee while.
It will be a whole bunch of markets, we're kind of, I hate to say the C word, but we're moving into that time of year, so we've got a whole run of festive markets, a whole lot of the tea green ones, which are great. So in Dundee, Aberdeen, Glasgow, so be out and about, which is good.
Yeah, come say hi.
Nice. Oh, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So thank you so much to Kat and Andy for coming on the podcast and sharing their story and sort of giving that real insight into how they work, how they operate, how they've built the business. I found it really fascinating just to sort of understand how that all comes together. And amazing that they're sort of running this alongside sort of their other jobs as well. And obviously we talk about how that's going to change, but I think it is really that sort of struggle and balance that a lot of creatives and a lot of people that I've spoken to have sort of ongoing, is how do you maintain and sustain sort of two sides of your career and maintain that creative fulfillment in both, which I think is quite tricky. But yeah, a lovely episode and a sort of fascinating insight into their world and how they work. So yeah, go and check out their Instagram if you haven't already, because they do some lovely process videos and sort of insight into what that process actually looks like, which is really interesting. So go check that out. And yeah, that's pretty much it for this week. If you want to keep up to date with new episodes coming out for the podcast, it's at cccdundee on Twitter and on Instagram. It's facebook.com/groups/cccdundee. Yeah, and if you'd like to support the podcast, it's ko-fi.com/cccdundee, and you can buy me a cup of coffee. That would be lovely. But until next time, bye.